progressive governments have claimed crackdowns on youth vaping, but retailers are flouting the law. The Ministry of Health only has one prosecution on the books, and the accused has fled the country. MPs fear vape manufacturers may outsmart new regulations. Concerns academics say are justified. Kia ora, ko Anika Smith aho. Anei te pūrongo tō rangapū mō tēnei wiki. Welcome to Focus on Politics. Introduced as a smoking cessation tool, vapes or e-cigarettes have well and truly been taken up. New Zealand's smoking rate has now fallen to historic lows, but vaping has had unintended consequences. 16% of 14 to 15-year-olds were regularly vaping last year, down 2% from 2022. It's a worry for a lot of parents, including Wellington mum Cheryl Robinson. She says her eldest son is hopelessly addicted to vaping and went through withdrawals during pandemic lockdowns, unable to pop out to the local dairy to get a device. It affected the whole family.
Fractured relationships within the house because of outbursts, rage, frustration. All of the things that you expect to see through, you know, withdrawal from any kind of substance that one is addicted to, but amplified because they're a youth and they're not equipped to deal with that. So it was extreme, you know, extreme outbursts of sometimes even violent behaviour, walls being punched, you know, things being thrown.
Ms. Robinson since teamed up with other mums throughout the country to set up Vape-Free Kids NZ, an advocacy group fighting for tougher regulations. And while regulations have been tightened up, she says things aren't getting better.
No, not by a long shot. In fact, if anything, since we got this new coalition government, the fight has become immeasurably harder. And we're seeing the tobacco industry having a hand in the policy that comes out of that office, and it's very obvious to anybody that cares to look at it. You cannot look at the regulations that are coming out and see that they favour anyone other than the tobacco industry. They certainly aren't created with the well-being of our children front of mind.
Associate Health Minister Casey Costello says it's ridiculous and wrong to say the tobacco industry has anything to do with her government's policies. The coalition implemented a nicotine limit and prescribed flavour descriptions in March, deferring the requirement to have removable batteries and child safety mechanisms to October. But a total ban on disposable vapes could be by far the biggest potential game changer in addressing youth vaping. It's set to come into force by the end of this year, but MPs are already raising concerns tobacco companies will outsmart the rules. Here's National's Sam Uffendell stressing to health officials at Select Committee, lawmakers want these products gone for good.
What we don't want to see is, at the start of October when the regulations come into force, is that the tobacco companies have outthought the regulations and got a device that gets around them on a technicality and is at a similarly low price point and defeats the intention and the purpose of what Cabinet approved. We want to see disposables or any little variations of it out.
It will take months for the new regulations to come into force, and in the meantime, it's not clear the current ones are working. Labour's Aisha Verrill putting to health officials that breaking the law seems pretty normal for retailers.
Illegal sales to young people are occurring at terribly high rates. 10% of general retailers, 17% of specialist retailers are breaking the law. And that's how we have such high rates of youth vaping, because breaking the law seems to be pretty normal.
The bending and breaking of rules seems pervasive. I tried my luck at buying a vape that shouldn't be on the market and didn't have to stray too far from Parliament.
So I'm heading to a dairy that's roughly 50 metres or so from the beehive, and I'm going to see if I can buy an illegal vape. Hey, what vapes? Could I please buy a blue vape, please?
Blue vape, this?
Yeah, thank you.
South Pole.
South Pole. Thank you. Okay, so just heading out of that dairy, I've bought a AirPops single-use vape, South Pole flavoured, and it's got 50 milligrams per milliliter of nicotine salt. The limit is about 20.
Enforcement officers carried out 767 compliance checks last year, issuing 79 infringement notices relating to vape products. The Ministry of Health has only one prosecution on its books, and in this case, the accused has fled the country. Here's Sam Uffendale again, talking about prosecution rates.
One prosecution, that is pretty dismal. And yes, the fines are increasing, but there should be high public interest in making sure they are prosecuted, because they are selling what is effectively an illegal drug to under 18-year-olds at that age. And we know that it does have devastating consequences within their households, within their education, and a number of other factors as well, not to mention their general and mental health.
Casey Costello accepts the compliance figures aren't good for underage sales or illegal products.
The statistics that they've shown is really disappointing, but we've got collectively, we're not just limited to retailers supplying to underage, and that's the problem we've got. We recognise that there's always going to be the cowboys in the industry that aren't compliant. As a whole, there is a genuine commitment to be compliant, but there is always going to be problems. We've had the issues with the types of devices being sold and the ones that have been, the regulations have made them banned them from the market, and they've still been in the market, all of those sort of things. But we've also got a big issue with social supply. So we know that there is a high volume of vaping being provided through older family members and friends, etc.
The Ministry of Health is responsible for prosecutions. Cases have to meet a public interest test that considers the cost of pursuing a prosecution and the seriousness of the offending. It's anticipated as fines increase, more prosecutions will meet the test. Casey Costello says she's driving really hard to push enforcement, but this will take time.
The increased penalties needs regulatory change, legislative change. And that's the problem, is that the process to get it through, get the legislation drafted and put it in place. So what I'm trying to do is as much as I can under this period. But right now we can do a lot around education and enforcement now, and that's what we're pushing forward. So it's not that we can't do more. We really want to put a lot of pressure in this enforcement regime, but also around the education and campaigning about vaping itself. And I think, there's been a lot of language, because we've talked about vaping being less harmful than smoking. And that's kind of created an impression that vaping's okay. It's how do we balance that, particularly with the young people messaging. So there's work that will be continuing right now to address those components.
That's all kind of well and good, and you've set out your rationale. I can understand that, but what do you say to parents who are concerned that their children are vaping or could pick up vaping between now and when the new restrictions come in? It's some months away.
I suppose what I'm trying to is to ensure that we've got some balance here. We've been really happy with the fact that our young people aren't smoking. That's been an amazing. And I'm not saying any stretch of the imagination that I'm saying, okay, I'm glad they're vaping, but we have gone through a period where we've been really worried about young people smoking, about the addiction to nicotine, to tobacco smoking, all of those sort of things. We've achieved a victory on one side. We're now trying to get some balance around us.
Otago University Professor of Public Health Janet Hook researches vape and tobacco marketing. She says young people may not be smoking, but they are vaping, and this isn't by accident.
The thing that we have found consistently in our research is that vaping products have been designed to appeal to young people, and young people, not surprisingly, have adopted vaping in very large numbers. And the young people who are adopting vaping, many of them are young people who have never smoked or who have never smoked regularly. So this idea that vaping products are supporting people who smoke and are not targeting young people is not borne out by the evidence.
Ms. Hook says tobacco companies have a long history of circumventing regulations and concerns loopholes will be found and exploited are justified. She says it's already happening.
I understand that reusable vaping products are already being sold at similar prices to the disposable vaping products that can't be sold legally any longer. So I think what we're going to be seeing is a change in the price points so that the affordability of the product to young people is maintained. And, you know, that to me is exploiting a loophole. It is inconsistent with the spirit of the regulation, which was to make these products less available, less affordable and less appealing to young people.
Casey Costello confirmed some regulations have seen immediate workarounds from vape manufacturers. She says this and changing price points highlight the need for a comprehensive review and enforcement regime for nicotine regulations. Cheryl Robinson has long called for a cap on the total number of vape retailers, 6,000 and counting, a policy Labor campaigned on.
If she's really concerned about enforcement, surely the way to achieve adequate enforcement with the number of people that she's got, including what she intends to hire, that would be, I would say, getting near the right amount of people to enforce the number of retail outlets that we were promised by the national government, which is 600. They were going to cap it at 600. They would be able to get around that many shops. 7,500 and growing, they're never going to do it. It's just not humanly possible to get around that many stores with that many staff.
RNZ asked Casey Costello if she saw any merit in capping retailers.
I see significant merit in reducing demand. I see significant merit in creating an enforcement regulatory regime that makes it a lot harder to operate. I have great concerns with picking an arbitrary number and saying this is how many we're going to have, because anybody who deals with addiction knows that reducing supply does not reduce demand. We have to attack demand, and that's what I'm focused on.
Cheryl Robinson has heard it all before.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a verbatim response that we received when we had our meeting with her a few weeks back. We really pressed her on whether she had any appetite to reduce the number of retailers, as was promised. And we managed to finally get out of her that it wasn't something she was looking at. The reason she gave us was, you know, that there are rural areas and low socioeconomic areas that wouldn't have adequate access to a vape retailer for people that are wanting to give up smoking. So we then put to her, well, what about the pharmacy model? Not prescription model, pharmacy model, where these products are sold in our pharmacies, and there's over 900 pharmacies in the country, so that's, you know, 300 odd more retailers than what was promised. And her response to that was, but no, there's people in rural communities and low socioeconomic communities that won't even access a GP or a pharmacy. And that's just patently not true. We've checked that out, and 98% of our population have access to a pharmacy. So it just seems like there's an answer for everything. Everything we suggest that would reduce access for children and preserve the integrity of what they say they're trying to achieve, which is smoking cessation. We feel that the best way to do that is to have these sold by people with a vested interest in actually preserving the integrity of that purpose. And, you know, pharmacies are set up for they stock Class A drugs, so they're considered secure enough for that. So I don't see why they can't be considered secure enough to sell vapes as well.
Associate Professor of Marketing at AUT, Summer Capitan, says it all comes down to political willpower.
We can't do this without regulation. Marketers will respond to regulations in the marketplace. That's how it works. We're not going to voluntarily, as marketers, stop advertising something that makes money and makes profit, or stop creating spaces like, you know, dairy owners need to make money. They need to make a living. Cost of living is higher. Other products don't necessarily bring people into their stores. the market will respond to what the regulations are. So it has to come from politics at this point.
Warning tobacco companies will work and rework their marketing to suit the regulations of the day and keep a customer base.
The moment the marketplace opened up to allowing widespread accessibility and availability, and even using role models to do this, the moment marketing was allowed to take place on this, that was the goal. Okay, we're losing the cigarette vote. Let's get nicotine in a different format. This is the tobacco playbook being revisited. And this is why many marketing and public policy people were so concerned to see some of these rules change and see some of this widespread availability.
Retailers have until the end of the year to phase out single-use products. The Ministry of Health says no country has actually managed to implement a complete ban on disposables yet. The legislation will need to be drafted carefully so as not to allow for the type of loopholes that have been found and used in the past. That's Focus on Politics. I'm Annika Smith. Thanks for joining us. Mā te wā.